I want you to visualize the power grid for a second.
Yeah.
But don't think about outlets or switches. Picture a single, incredibly long, incredibly tight rope.
Okay.
And we are all, every single one of us, holding on to it. It stretches across continents, cuts through forests, hangs over mountains. It's delivering everything, your electricity, your internet, your Amazon packages.
It's a compelling image, a very fragile one.
It is, but here is the terrifying part. If that rope snaps in just one place, the tension is gone. The whole thing goes slack.
And everyone holding on to it falls.
Exactly.
That is precisely the visualization of linear fragility. Our entire modern civilization is built on these, highly efficient but incredibly brittle lines. We optimize for length and speed, but we sacrifice redundancy.
Totally. A storm in Texas knocks out a factory in Ohio.
Or a ship gets stuck sideways in the Suez Canal and suddenly you can't buy a toaster in London.
Right. And that fragility is the starting point for today's deep dive. We've been poring over a stack of documents from a venture studio called Dereticular, and they are proposing something that sounds like it's straight out of a cyberpunk novel. They want to move us from linear fragility to something they call spherical resilience.
Or, as they dramatically put it in their manifesto, the death of the line.
The death of the line. I have to admit, I love the drama of that. So
Yeah.
today we are unpacking their core technology, the Rural Infrastructure Operating System, or RIOS.
Rios, right.
But I want to be clear right off the bat. This isn't just about putting some solar panels on a roof and calling it a day. This is, I mean, they're calling it a civilization in a box.
That is the best way to describe it. We are talking about a system that combines heavy industrial hardware with privacy-focused, decentralized code to create what they call sovereign communities.
And the goal here is massive. They aren't just trying to keep the lights on during a storm. They're trying to solve the Oracle problem.
Which is the holy grail of crypto and decentralized networks.
Right. It's that fundamental disconnect between the digital world and the physical world.
Yeah.
If I have a digital network, how does it know that a solar panel actually generated 50 kilowatts of power?
How do you trust it?
Yeah. How do you trust physical reality without a central authority, like a power company or, a government guy with a clipboard checking the meter?
That is the billion-dollar question. Because if you can't verify the physical reality, the digital ledger is just, well, it's just a list of lies.
So buckle up. We are about to get into the physics of trust, unspoofable radio waves, and why your next resume might be a soulbound NFT. Let's dive in.
Let's do it.
Okay, so first off, let's orient ourselves. We kept seeing this term island mode in the documents. To me, that sounds like a vacation setting.
It does, but in engineering terms, it's serious business.
Right.
Very serious. Island mode is the ability for a node, say, a farm, a factory, or a small rural town, to disconnect from the main grid and keep functioning.
Yeah.
100%.
And not just keep the freezer running functioning right. We're talking about maintaining an industrial economy.
Exactly. It means running your AI, your power generation, your logistics, your communications, even if the national grid collapses and the internet cable gets cut. Dereticular is the platform building the ecosystem to make that possible.
So to do that, they use this framework they call the Trinity Stack. I found this really helpful to, wrap my head around the scope of what they're building. You've got the heart, the brain, and the soul.
It's a useful metaphor. Let's start with the heart. This is the hardware.
And this is where that civilization in a box idea really lands. I was looking at their partner list, specifically a company called Agra Energy. I initially thought, okay, biofuel, sure. But this isn't just burning corn.
No, it's much more sophisticated. These are waste energy plasma gasification units.
Plasma gasification. That sounds like something from Star Trek.
It's high tech, but the application is very grounded. You take agricultural waste manure, corn stalks, trash, and you zap it at incredible temperatures. You aren't burning it, you're breaking the molecular bonds.
Wow.
And the output is synthetic gas that powers a generator. So a farm becomes its own power plant using its own trash.
Okay, so that's the base load power. And then for moving things around, they have these curb cars.
Autonomous logistics
I
pods.
looked up the specs on these. And they aren't like those little sidewalk robots delivering burritos. These are distinct, rugged units for moving heavy goods between these rural nodes.
So you have power from Agra and logistics from curb cars. That's the physical muscle.
Right.
Then you have the brain, which is Rios itself. This is the AI native operating system that manages all these electrons and data packets. It decides, do we store this power? Do we use it to run a server? Do we charge the curb car?
And finally, the soul, which seems to be the education piece.
the Reticular Academy. This is crucial, because if you hand a farmer a plasma gasification unit and a decentralized mesh network, and it breaks, who fixes it?
You can't exactly call Comcast support.
Precisely. They are training what they call sovereign systems architects. They need people who understand the full stack, from the welding of the pipes to the coding of the smart contracts.
They're actually running an initiative called Flood the Forge to recruit developers.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very, I don't know, movement-based.
It does.
But I want to pivot to the part of the research that I had to read three times to believe, the trustless identity layer.
This brings us right back to that Oracle problem.
Right. So help me set the scene here. In a normal database or even a normal blockchain,
right,
if I type in I have 100 gold bars, the computer just has to take my word for it.
Or maybe it checks with the bank, a central source of truth.
But here, we are off-grid. So if I say, my solar panel made 50 kilowatts, how does the network know I'm not just lying to get free energy credits?
That is the classic garbage in, garbage out problem. If a human can type the data, a human can fake the data. So Reticular solution is radical. Remove the human from the data entry entirely.
No.
They rely on a hardware root of trust.
And this involves something called RFF, or radio frequency fingerprinting. Now, hold on. I've got an iPhone. You've got an iPhone. They came from the same factory. They use the same chips. Are you telling me they're physically different?
Yes, I am. And this is where physics gets really cool. When a factory makes 1,000 identical sensors or chips, they are nominally identical. But at a microscopic level, there are tiny imperfections in the soldering, the silicon wafer, the circuitry.
The manufacturing flaws.
Flaws is one word, but unique characteristics is probably better.
Right.
Because of those tiny microscopic differences, when that device powers up and transmits a radio signal, it has a unique, a specific transient response.
So it's like a voice.
That's the perfect analogy. You and I can both say the word hello. The word is the same, the data is the same, but our voices, the timbre, the pitch, are unique. RFF listens to the voice of the voltage.
So Ryos scans the radio waves coming from the solar inverter and says,
it says, okay, I recognize this specific hum. This is physically the device we authorized.
That is wild. So even if I cloned the software perfectly, if I hacked the code, I couldn't fake the hum.
You'd need to clone the microscopic hardware imperfections, which is physically impossible without building an atom-for-atom replica. If you try to simulate the device with a laptop, the radio hum will be wrong, and the network will reject it.
It's a retinal scan for a machine.
Exactly. And once the physics checks out, they use a TPM 2.0 chip, a trusted platform module, to cryptographically sign the data. The private key is burned into the chip at the factory. It can't be extracted.
So the result is physical truth. The network isn't trusting a user named SolarGuy99. It's verifying the physics of the specific machine that signed the data.
And that is how you solve the Oracle problem. You anchor the digital code to physical reality.
Okay, so the machine creates this truthful data. Now it needs to go somewhere. And this is where I think the business model gets really interesting. They aren't using AWS cloud servers. They're using Freenet.
Right.
But they're using two versions of it.
The dual stack approach, Hyphenet and Lacutus.
I really like the analogy we found in the notes for this. The librarian and the trader.
It fits perfectly. Hyphenet is the legacy Freenet. It's the librarian, the archivist. It is slow, incredibly secure, and designed for static, immutable data.
So repair manuals, schematics, legal contracts, that kind of thing.
Exactly. If the internet is cut, you don't want your repair manual to be on a cloud server in Virginia that you can't reach. You want it on the local Hyphenet node. It ensures knowledge isn't lost.
But you can't run a power market on a library. It's just too slow.
Right. That's where the trader comes in. The new Freenet, or Lacutus. This is designed for dynamic, real-time data using WebAssembly smart contracts.
Now, play devil's advocate for me here. Why not just use Ethereum? Everyone knows Ethereum. It's the standard for smart contracts. Why build a whole new thing?
It comes down to basic economics. In crypto, you pay gas fees for every transaction. If a solar farm is logging its voltage every single second,
or a curb car is logging its location every 10 meters,
you're talking thousands of transactions a day. And if you're paying, I don't know, $2 or even 50 cents per transaction,
you go bankrupt before lunch. The business model collapses.
That's it. This is why we don't have widespread industrial IoT on blockchain yet. It's just too expensive.
So Lacutus is the game changer.
Lacutus is designed to be a zero gas registry. It allows for high-frequency industrial logging without those per-transaction fees. It makes the economics of a decentralized power grid actually work. It turns a money pit into a viable business.
Okay, but here is the rub. I was looking into how you actually get this stuff. You went down a bit of a rabbit hole on Linux distributions, Kubuntu, Kali, even this niche one called Mofo Linux.
Right, the tools of the trade.
And what became immediately clear is that this is not user-friendly stuff. You can't just download the Sovereign Stack from the App Store.
None at all.
Most mainstream Linux distros don't bundle FreeNet anymore because it's, you know, resource-heavy. Mofo Linux used to, but they removed it.
It's a huge barrier to entry. We're talking about command line interfaces, managing dependencies.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare for a regular person.
Exactly. If you tell a farmer, hey, to be energy independent, just compile this kernel, they're going to laugh at you.
And that is the gap Dear Articular is trying to fill with Rios. They are trying to build the GI, the graphical interface for the revolution. They want to package all that complexity into a box.
So you don't have to be a Linux wizard to run a sovereign node. It's the Appleification of the apocalypse stack.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, making resilience accessible.
All right, I want to move to one of the most mind-bending parts of the system, global polling. This deals with the double spend problem. Now, in Bitcoin, I know double spend means I can't send the same digital coin to you and to someone else.
Correct. At the same time.
But Dear Articular is applying this to physical objects. How does a drone get double spent?
Well, imagine a hacker. They clone the digital identity of a delivery drone, a curb car. They have the software key. So they try to log in to the network in Texas to steal some energy credits or pick up a package.
While the real physical drone is actually in Arizona. So the network sees two identical drones in two different places, both claiming to be drone 45.
Exactly. And without a central server like Google checking GPS, how does the decentralized mesh know which one is real?
And the answer involves what I'm calling the teleportation check.
It's physics again.
Right.
When the drone connects to a node in Texas, that node checks the distributed state contract. Think of it like a massive global phone book that no single person owns.
Okay.
It looks up drone 45 and sees its last known location.
Last seen, Arizona, 2 minutes ago.
And the system does a simple calculation. Distance divided by time equals velocity. To get from Arizona to Texas in 2 minutes, that drone would have to travel at, what, Mach 10?
Which is physically impossible for a delivery drone.
Right. It's a physics violation. The system flags it immediately. It doesn't matter that the hacker has the correct password. The physics don't add up.
And the identity is locked. I love that. It's using the speed of light and travel time as a security feature.
Yeah.
But what happens when the drone moves illegally? How does it prove it didn't just teleport?
That brings us to provenance. When a device leaves a node, it gets an exit visa.
An exit visa, like a passport stamp.
Exactly. It's a cryptographically signed timestamp from the previous node. When the drone arrives at the next node, it has to present this visa. I was at node A at 1:00 p.m. I traveled for 15 minutes. Now I am at node B at 1:14 p.m.
So it creates a chain of custody.
A continuous, unbroken path of trust. You can't just appear on the network. You have to prove you traveled there.
So far, we've talked a lot about machines. Machines are great. They follow rules. They have RF fingerprints. But let's be real. Humans are messy. Humans are the weak link.
Always. Social engineering is always easier than hacking encryption.
If I'm running a sovereign node, how do I stop a disgruntled employee from shutting down the power grid? Or, conversely, how do I authorize a technician to fix it without giving them a password they can sell on the dark web?
This is where the human element comes in, via the sovereign badge.
Which is an NFT. Mm. But before our listeners roll their eyes, this isn't a picture of a bored monkey.
No, absolutely not. It's a soulbound token. In the crypto world, soulbound means it is non-transferable. It lives in your digital wallet, but you cannot send it to anyone else. You can't sell it.
So it's like a digital diploma issued by the Dear Articular Academy.
That's what it is.
I found the maintenance scenario and the source material really helpful to visualize this. Can we walk through that?
Sure. Let's say you have a technician, Alice. She needs to shut down a generator for maintenance. Now, normally, if a generator's output drops to zero, the network thinks it's broken.
Right, the algorithm panics.
The credit rating of the site drops. It looks like a failure. But Alice has a sovereign badge that certifies her as a level 3 admin. She connects her tablet to the machine. She authorizes the shutdown.
And the machine creates a log entry.
A dual signed object. This is key. The log is signed by the machine's TTM, proving which machine it is.
ND by Alice's sovereign badge, proving who authorized it.
Exactly. So the global market looks at that data on Freenet and says, oh, the power isn't out because of a failure. It's out because a certified expert named Alice is fixing it.
It preserves the value and reliability of the site. It turns system failure into authorized maintenance.
It adds context to the raw data.
And what about for really dangerous stuff? Like wiping the operating system.
They use the four eyes principle.
Like in the submarine movies. Two keys turn at the same time.
Basically, yes. The system can require two different sovereign badges from two different wallets to sign the command within a 5-minute window. So Alice can't go rogue and delete the OS unless Bob agrees to turn his key too.
It's fascinating how they've taken these very physical, military-style security concepts and encoded them into smart contracts.
That's really the core theme here. They are applying the principles of Linux, you know, open source decentralization, and the principles of Freenet privacy, censorship resistance, to the physical world of heavy industry.
It goes back to that idea of provenance you mentioned earlier.
Yes. In the dereticular system, trust isn't something you give to a company because they have a nice logo or a Super Bowl ad. Trust is derived.
Derived from what?
It's a three-part formula. It's derived from physics. That's the RF fingerprinting and the velocity checks. It's derived from math. That's the cryptography and the TPM chips. And it's derived from reputation. That's the sovereign badge and the academy.
The chain of trust.
It's a closed loop. You know where the electron came from, you know which machine made it, and you know which human authorized it. No middleman required.
It sounds utopian, but also incredibly complex.
Yeah.
We've talked about the civilization in a box, but that box is heavy.
It is.
We are talking about farmers needing to understand private keys, mesh networking, and plasma gasification. That is a lot to ask.
That is the big gamble. Is this the future of infrastructure? Is spherical resilience the answer to our fragile grid? Or is it just too technically demanding for the average person to operate?
That is the question I want to leave you with today. We live in a world where we trade convenience for fragility. We let Amazon handle the logistics and the power company handle the lights because it's easy, it's effortless. But Dereticular is asking, what happens when easy stops working?
When the line snaps, are you ready to hold the rope yourself?
Heavy stuff. But that's why we dive deep. It forces you to ask how much responsibility you are willing to take for your own survival. Thanks for listening to this deep dive into the sovereign stack. We'll catch you on the next one.
Stay resilient.